time to feel the rush of the round table. Brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Are you really an independent contractor? Find out in seconds for free at PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Let's bring in the round table this afternoon. Bill Carroll, host of the Bill Carroll Show Fridays at noon here on this very radio station and host of the Morning Rush at CFRA in Ottawa. Bill, good afternoon.
Good to be here.
Chris Chapin, partner at Upstream Strategy, is here as well. Nice to have you, sir.
Nice to be here.
And it's Ryan Doyle and Reg Minaire on The Rush this afternoon. Maybe we'll take a time out from what we were just talking about and go into this conversation when it comes to a 20-year-old charged in the death of a Brampton mother and her three kids. When we talk about these charges, they are serious. They're not as serious as impaired driving charges. These are dangerous driving charges causing death. But, Bill, you know, I was saying earlier, I'm almost sick to death of having these conversations because nothing changes. You've been doing this longer than I have, and I'm sure you've had your share of conversations about sentencing. I know you have. Sentencing and how weak we are when it comes to people, you know, when found guilty in situations like this, they don't seem to get the same sentence that the public wants them to get.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at some of the funeral pictures, and I don't know about you, but in my darkest moments when my wife and kids are traveling without me, and I think about how awful it would be if something happened to them, I always think the same thing. I would much rather be with them, because how do you go on? And that's what I've been thinking about, looking at those photographs. How do the people that they left behind go on? It's just, that kind of pain is unimaginable. So we have to take that pain and remember how it gets caused, right? Without convicting anyone in any specific case. It's terrible when people get drunk and get behind the wheel of a car and kill someone. But at least you can say at some level they made a stupid decision. This seems worse somehow when someone is not drunk and they're driving recklessly. If someone is taking that weapon that is a car and using it in a way that it's almost inevitable someone is going to die, it makes me even angrier. And I'm angry enough about drunk driving cases. I don't know how you could be too tough in these situations when someone makes a sober decision to use a vehicle in such a dangerous way and snuffs out those beautiful lights. We have to do something, and we have to be tough. We have to be tough, and I'm not convinced we will be.
Yeah, Chris, you know, when I see a case like this, and you see inside the church today with those three little caskets, and you know that those are three children lost. It's a mom lost. It's a husband whose life is completely in shambles. And now we hear about charges, reckless driving charges causing death. That individual will have his day in court. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, at the end of it all, we have seen time after time, and we can take it from the broad sense of things, we've seen time after time where when people are found guilty of things like this, the sentence doesn't match what we're looking for.
Yeah, listen, it's cases like these, anytime you get kids involved, I just think the sentence is probably never going to fulfill the emotion that we all feel when we hear stories and see stories like this take place. It's just it's a level of tragedy that words and justice can barely fix. So I think we definitely need to have a conversation about strengthening the sanctions and the penalties for committing crimes like this, because at the end of the day, especially given this individual's past behavior, or at least what's been reported on it, this was a known quantity in the community, and he continued his behavior, and he'll have his day in court and he'll have his defense. But it's certainly tough to swallow to think that the kind of crimes that you can commit and get penalized and sent to jail for far longer seem far less important in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I hear you, Chris. You know, what punishment suffices that kind of loss? Let's talk about Toronto Mayor John Tory addressing that there's systemic racism in policing, but not supporting defunding. He's presenting something different to council on Monday, and it's not about defunding. It's about detasking, creating another force that isn't weaponized to go and deal with situations of emergencies like mental health crises. What do you think about that, Bill?
You know, I watched a Sky News documentary today about a bunch of American police chiefs and sheriffs who've been going to Scotland to be trained in how to de-escalate situations. And I got to say, I didn't think I'd be very impressed by it. But you think about a police force where 90% of the members are in uniform but not armed, and how they deal with situations. And these American police chiefs were also very skeptical. You know, they'd be shown a demonstration of a guy with a knife, and they almost all said, "That guy gets shot in the United States. That guy with a knife gets shot." And the Scottish police showed how they deal with it, how they go in softly and not loudly, drop the knife the way North America police forces do. They go in speaking softly. They back away. They keep backing away. They keep buying time. They put cars and other obstacles in the way until they can try to calm someone down. Now, do they work 100%, especially in the U.S. where so many more people have guns that police confront? Maybe not, but it just really showed me and convinced me there are better ways to deal with a lot of these situations. And that's really, in a sense, what we're talking about here, right? Sending people without guns who are still officials who go in to try to de-escalate it using psychology. So I actually think it's a pretty good idea and we ought to explore it. In the end, though, you're putting people into potentially dangerous situations and you have to be ready to lose some of those people too. Because when you're dealing someone with mental health issues, especially, they can be very unpredictable. And the officers, whatever we call them, who go in unarmed, could get themselves in trouble.
Yeah, some people saying, though, that what Tory's motion is involving distracts from the movement about defunding police and actually addressing the violence and the deaths of people at the hands of police. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's a difference between a very U.S.-based movement behind defunding the police, given the regularity in which a lot of these incidents were taking place in the United States, versus here in Toronto or in many Canadian cities, where there's no question we do have incidents where we should take a deeper look at this, but certainly not to the frequency we've seen south of the border. I think what the mayor's proposed is a good halfway point. I'm shocked from what Bill said that the Scots could do anything where they kept their voices down and de-escalated anything.
And these cops were in Glasgow. Can you imagine some of the ruffians they've experienced?
I remember getting off the plane in Glasgow and seeing the police with assault rifles in their hands. That seemed the far better way to get a bunch of hooligans in order. But no, I think what the mayor's proposed is the right way to approach this. I do not believe defunding is the answer, but I do think there's a question between that can be had about restructuring our police forces, making sure that we have people who are qualified to do what we expect them to do, whether that involves lethal assault under the right circumstances, but also when dealing with those that might be dealing with a mental health issue. I think it's appropriate that we make sure we have the right people at the scene when they're needed.
Interesting story today from the Canadian Tourism Association. They're pushing to loosen restrictions, and they say it's posing to be a bit of a challenge for them trying to get these restrictions loosened. But the second wave of COVID-19 is hanging in the backdrop, and they're saying that at the very least, Bill, we should be encouraging and allowed to promote interprovincial travel. Maybe not down to the United States of America, but, you know, if somebody wants to go to British Columbia, or if somebody wants to go to Alberta, or even another part of their province, that should be encouraged in some way, because ultimately, if we don't do that, tourism is going to take a massive hit, not to say that they haven't already, but an even bigger one.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to be very rational about how we go forward with this, because there aren't a lot of studies that show airlines are actually big spreaders. There's not a lot of work been done there, but in cases where people had SARS, they looked at it, and there wasn't massive spread on airplanes. So I don't want the borders open to other countries anytime soon, though. You know, I love my American friends and American cousins, but really, the way they're dealing with this pandemic and the way the numbers are turning for the worse every day, that's the last thing we need. But interprovincial, by all means. You know, I think that we should really be encouraging people to move around in their own province, across provincial borders. We need to get out, spend our money in Canada this summer, keeping in mind we still have to be safe, we still have to be cautious, but let's get out there. And if that means I can maybe fly to Vancouver instead of down to Los Angeles this summer, maybe we'll do that.
Yeah, Chris, I'm already thinking of the slogan, you know, this summer, be an American, because a lot of these places rely on American tourists to come up and visit. You're going to have to sort of take on that role if you want these tourism locations to survive.
Yeah, I think this is all going to essentially boil down to every individual's trust and fear. You know, right now you can hop on a plane and fly out to British Columbia, and you can fly out to Nova Scotia. The restrictions are a lot less than most people believe they are right now. There's some where you're getting stopped driving across the border at borderline, say between Quebec and Ontario. Earlier on, there was a lot tighter, but I think it's just going to come down to, you know, do I feel safe? Do I feel comfortable leaving my home, leaving my city to fly to a different jurisdiction? Personally, I do. I think it's a great idea to encourage inter-Canadian travel. I think it's something as a nation, well before this pandemic, we've done a terrible job at. You don't have to look any further than just the way we've artificially increased airfare between our country. It's cheaper to fly to most places in Europe and down to the States than it is to get a flight from Toronto to Vancouver. So I think we should be doing a better job as a whole encouraging travel within this beautiful country. I know I'm guilty of not traveling across it nearly as much as I probably should have. I've traveled more in Europe than I have to most parts of this country. So I think it's a great thing, but I think ultimately this is just going to come down to, do Canadians feel safe enough to leave their own home, yet alone travel to another part of this country?
Yeah, we are having this conversation. I know Bill's in Ottawa, but we're having this conversation from the center of the universe, right? And I have to tell you that...
Well, you're all in Ottawa now?
If we take the temperature of this country, everyone else don't want to see us, guys. Like, if you see what's happening in Atlantic Canada, in Newfoundland, they're trying to get tourists to stop coming and looking at icebergs. In New Brunswick, there was that doctor, right, at Campbellton Regional Hospital, who went to Quebec, came back, went to work, and then created a new cluster of COVID-19. It shut down the emergency room of that hospital. And you heard the premier of New Brunswick saying, the police have been notified about this case. He was very upset that a New Brunswicker would go to another province and come back and positive with COVID-19. That doctor publicly said, I don't know where I got COVID-19, if I got it in Quebec or not. And he thinks that he's being targeted for this. But I also lived in Vancouver for 7 years. And every time I told someone I was from Toronto, they said, oh, well, don't tell your friends about this place. And that is before COVID. Okay. So, I mean, I appreciate the tourism needs, but I don't think people want to see us, guys.
Let's end off on one of our tourist attractions. Toronto is going to be cracking down on beach parties this weekend. Fresh off our conversation with the mayor this week, where he said it wasn't something that they could have done last weekend when hundreds of, if not thousands of people crowded into Woodbine Beach. Bill, I really don't understand this. Either you're giving out tickets or you're not. Please stop confusing me.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be as big a problem. First of all, I mean, the weather was extraordinarily hot, right? And nothing else was open. I think this weekend, people have more choices. So hopefully they'll go to restaurant patios where there's a little more control over the situation, and it'll just be fine. In the meantime, though, you got to find people, and you got to make a big show of it, right? Go to the media. Let the television stations, radio stations follow you, and let's get that story on the news right away about people paying big fines. You got to crack down on it.
That's exactly what I want, Chris. I want a beach perp walk, and I want it all over the news.
Oh, dear. No, I mean, I think that's ridiculous. I think we've seen – I think at some point here we have to let reason set in, and we saw there wasn't an outbreak after the Trinity Bellwoods debacle that everybody was convinced was going to send every single person there to a hospital and create chaos. It didn't happen as a result of the Black Lives Matter protests where people were walking in the streets side by side. I think we know enough about this by now that I think there are things that are worth taking overly seriously. And I think there's a lot of things that we've overblown. And I think even that beach party was one of them.
Yeah, well, the Trinity Bellwoods thing, I thought the photographs exaggerated the size of the crowd. Show me photographs from above before I'm convinced it's a big crowd. But then make that the rule. Make that the rule, though, right?
Last time I asked Ryan for a photo of an aerial shot, he sent me a photo of Woodstock. So I don't hold your breath on that.
We've got to go. It sounds like you two are talking to each other from Toronto to Scotland. So I'm going to leave that at that. Bill, Chris,
well,
thank you so much.
Put down that knife before I get angry.
We'll be right back with more of this encore presentation of The Rush with Ryan and Jay. News Talk 1010.